Welcome to PCMC, Pop Culture, Man, Children. But this is not just a podcast for men. It's a podcast for men, women, and other. Anyone can listen to this podcast and enjoy it. We are not part of the manosphere that you've heard so much about. I'm host Mike Mangiorno. This is a if this is your first episode, welcome. This is a podcast about pop culture, movies, TV, books when we're feeling squirrely, music very rarely, sports not at all.
Come on in.
It's kind of like nerdy kind of culture. Some retro, but we also keep it. We're not stuck in the past, I don't think.
No, we keep it fresh.
We like young things.
Yeah, we're hip.
Yeah. That's the voice of Anthony Mangiorno. Anthony, how are you?
Great. Hello, everyone.
How are you doing today?
I'm feeling good. There's a tinge of autumn in the air.
Yeah, we're at that glorious point where we're getting out of the dog days. The dog days are the worst, really.
We're at the threshold. I love
What's
summer,
worst?
But
oh, you yeah, okay. I know you do. What's worse, the dog days of summer, or like the like end of fall, beginning of winter, when it's just raining?
That's the worst to me. The darkest,
lousy March weather.
No, see, to me the darkest, the dark night of the soul is like early November. No, not early November. Like early December. Like after Thanksgiving.
Oh, not at all. I completely disagree.
Yeah.
To me,
I mean, Christmas is great,
but
then
Halloween to Christmas is like you got those vibes.
Know.
Once Christmas is over and the glitz and glamour goes away,
yeah,
and the lights are good, then we're like in the fucking Donner party, man.
Yeah,
then we're in the fucking cold.
That's really dark. I don't know. The more I think about it, every season is horrible. I'm
happy for about 2 weeks a year.
Me too. I'm but a leaf. I hate darkness. That's my thing. I hate when it's 4 o'clock and it's pitch black outside.
I don't mind that.
Oh, I hate it. It makes me so depressed.
I don't mind it a bit. I don't love the sun.
You don't have sad because I got sad.
Oh no, I
coming
do.
Out of my ears.
And I have a therapy lamp. Which works.
You do. I know. I've been meaning. That's been on my list for like 5 years.
You
to get
should
one of
really.
Those.
It's a tiny purchase that'll make a big difference because it was like $25.
But here's my thing. Why I'm avoiding it. I've heard that you have to like intentionally sit in front of it morning.
It's on my work desk, so I just put it on when I go to when I work.
And you don't look crazy.
No, actually, I think it really illuminates me well. Like,
ooh,
when I
is it like a ring light?
Yeah, when I have to do a Microsoft Teams meeting, people are like, sir, you are aglow.
Well, maybe it's, and I've heard it's pretty inexpensive, right?
No, it's very inexpensive. It's like nothing.
I'll get to it.
It's super worth it. And no, it just has to be. You also don't have to put your face on it. It has to be like a little more than an arm's distance.
Okay.
You just put, like, if you had it right now, it'd be just right there and you wouldn't be thinking about it.
It doesn't, is it so bright that you feel like you should wear sunglasses kind of a light?
No. No.
So it's just like a glowing orb.
Well, mine is a screen.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's like a glowing screen.
Interesting.
It's not hot.
Mm.
It's like an LCD. Yeah. It's
so it's not just a space heater
that
you put on top of your face.
Space heaters. They're basically big toasters that we just leave outside on wood. Well, I'm here excited because we are doing a full episode. We're going to do trailers. I don't like doing the news anymore.
I've noticed that, and that's really upsetting because you know my favorite part was the news.
Because you don't have to do anything except react.
Exactly.
Well,
because
it was
the only part that was a surprise.
I don't know why I don't like doing the news anymore.
Is it because you don't want to turn on the news?
No, because we don't do real news anyway. We always did pop culture news. But I don't know. I like reacting to trailers. We're not reactors, but I like talking about trailers and stuff.
Well, trailers are also news in a way.
In a sense, they are an announcement of sorts.
They are.
And then we're going to do the chill sesh, the things we're reading, watching, playing with, and then our current obsessions.
Sounds good.
So you want to get into some of these trailers? We are looking at six trailers today.
Yeah, you sent me a lot. And then I was like, why do I have all these trailers? And it's like, oh, right, because we're not doing the news.
We're looking at six.
So we're looking. Let's do. You want to start with Good Boy?
Good Boy.
All right. So this trailer made me cry.
You know what? I got a little emotional too watching it.
You know what really got me? There's for
the
those
quote from the critic that said one of the most
expressive emotive actors of our time,
no matter what species.
Yeah, like this dog is going to win an Oscar.
This dog is so cute, and it's the director's dog.
So cute. So is this film just like a love letter to the dog?
Yes.
Okay, amazing.
The director said he got the idea when his dog was like barking off into space, and he was like, do dogs see ghosts?
I used to say that about Lando, Janine's dog.
Yeah.
Because she lived across the street from an animal hospital, and sometimes he would just randomly start barking, and I said, like, those are the souls going up to the Rainbow Bridge.
Yeah. That's what inspired it.
Yeah, so for those of you who haven't seen, this is a horror movie from the point of view of a dog, and it looks like it's like the dog's owner is being possessed or tormented
somehow. Yeah.
But what really made me cry is there's a part where the dog screams.
Yeah.
Which you don't really hear a lot in film. Like when a dog yells out or yelps in pain.
Yeah.
It's such a pathetic sound. And there's a part where like something scary happens in the trailer and then you hear the dog do that. And I was like, oh no. Is he hurt?
So the director, this movie, some people have seen this movie. It was at a film festival and it made a huge splash. But for those of us who haven't seen it then, the director's come out and said the dog does not die.
Yeah, thank God. I needed that information.
Yes, or people wouldn't see it. The dog does get into spooky, scary situations, which make me feel nervous. Because what's purer than a cute dog?
I know.
So this dog's going to be... But then, like, you know, it's interesting because it's the trailer also has, like, quotations from, I guess, critics that have seen it, and one of them is like surprisingly heartfelt.
Yeah,
I'm like, what is gonna happen in this movie? Do you know that?
But the thing is, the dog doesn't need to die for me to cry. Like, the dog just needs to be sad, and I'll cry.
But you just gotta remember, the dog's not really going through this.
But he looks like he is. He's one of the most emotive actors of our time. This is the Meryl Streep of dogs.
The dog is gonna win.
And when you see that quote, it's like a shot of him like reacting to stimuli. Yeah,
he's acting.
Oh God, I hope he wasn't hurt in the making of this movie. No,
the director, it's the director's dog. He loves him very much. So the plan was, so this movie was partially produced by Shudder, or Shudder bought it. Mm-hmm. So the plan was to put it out in a limited release and then quickly put it onto Shudder streaming service. The trailer blew up so much that it's getting a wide release.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm really excited.
So it's going to be everywhere. You know, look, it's a gimmick, but I think it's a smart gimmick. It's a good gimmick.
It is. You know,
and there've been a few movies like this lately, like that movie. What was the movie with the cat that was like a big deal last year or a year before last?
Garfield.
No. Well, it's like a flood. Flow? Was it Flow?
I don't know. I've never heard of it. This is not ringing one bell. All right. Flood Cat.
Oh yeah, Flood Cat.
I was thinking about. I was like, oh, compare this to like Cujo.
Yes.
You know, it's like, it's not the killer dog. It's the dog just witnessing the events.
Yeah, Flow from 2022. Okay. It's an animated movie. Yeah. You mean Cujo?
Yeah, I do. It's pretentious.
So I hope Peach is allowed to see it with me.
You think there'll be dog screenings?
I hope so.
That might be too scary for dogs.
Every time we go to the movies, we have this running joke. You know how like, when you're in a couple and you have a dog together, you create a character for the dog and speak.
Of course. And if somebody else does it, it's all wrong.
That's not what my dog sounds like. Upset. That's not what my dog thinks at all. So, we have this running bit that she hates cinema because we go to the movies and she can't come with us. And she learned that I teach cinema classes and she feels betrayed.
That's so funny.
So
we sometimes joke around that Maisie's a Republican.
Oh, that's funny.
But just because she talks with the other dogs in the neighborhood and they've indoctrinated her.
Right.
It's elaborate backstory.
Yeah. I always tell Peach, like, I'm sorry, civil rights hasn't gotten there yet. But
we're getting there. Did you see? There's another thing we did for Maisie as her character. She was really, our version of her was celebrating this.
Sure.
A recent case in New York that involved a dog, the judge decided that for the first time ever, that a dog is can be considered part of a family, not just property, which nice. Does actually edge them closer to having civil rights.
And they should be on your insurance. Like, I know you can buy pet insurance.
I agree. They should be allowed on, they to should put be your dependents. Dogs on your insurance. They should be pet yes. dependents. Yeah. But yeah, that's so it was like a kind of a groundbreaking case. And we were like, oh, Maisie's so excited about this. Yeah. It's like Ted. Like, do you have a soul?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's incredible. Good boy. I can't wait to see it.
Looks great. Looks really, really great.
So we looked at the trailer for Only Murders in the Building season 5. Can you
Is
believe
this
we're at 5?
Final season?
I sure hope so.
I know, me too.
And by the way, I don't dislike it. I do think season 3 I didn't like. Just because season 3 did this thing where they were like, hold on, let me give you more slack on your microphone, sir.
What's happening?
I either want to put it in the center of the table because I don't want the okay
is that good
yeah so season 3 did that thing where they were unhappy with each other and they were broken up,
yeah, which is never
which
works.
Is never good because it's not pleasing. But the best parts of that show were the three of them getting into hijinks and being like the Scooby-Doo gang. But season 4 was good, and now the cast has gotten so bad.
God, an all-star cast. Meryl's back again. Meryl is like just part of the cast.
She's really dating Martin Short, though.
I knew that, which is really funny.
Isn't that lovely?
It is lovely. You know who else is dating? Did you know that Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson are dating?
Is that true? That's
yes,
really happening?
Yes, they are, yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah. And now we've got Renee Zellweger.
Yeah.
Diane Wiest
is the wife of the
yeah, woman. I'm a huge Wiest head.
In this trailer, they go to Staten Island. It looks like the mob is involved.
Well, they went to Staten Island last season, too.
I don't remember what for.
But it looked like it was actually filmed in Jersey City.
Oh, okay.
Remember, it was like they went to like that Irish bar? I think that was supposed to be Staten Island.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah,
And then Paul Rudd's like brother
right.
or something. It's gotten very ridiculous, but I'm fine with that.
Bobby Cannavale's in this season.
Yeah. It looks good.
Yeah. Yeah,
they're getting the older they get, though, the more I'm like, she's not the plucky young one anymore. She's just one of them now. Now she's just a lady.
No, it's the kind of thing where it's like it's so much fun, but will it have diminishing returns? I mean, look, nothing is that. It's all been consistently what it is, but that first season was just like kind of like out of nowhere. You heard about it, and then it's like, wow, like it's you're impressed by how like sincere the tone is,
yeah,
while also being funny. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's hard to keep that going.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I kind of hope it is. I hope it's a good season. It looks like it will be a good season, but I also want it to end because I don't want it to be like season 6, 7, and then like. It just you did like that's like oh that's season 6. Remember that one? That's a real bad one.
Right, right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I also want, and last season started to kind of hint towards this. I want a big overall tie it all together thing.
They did strongly hint at that last season. Remember
right, they brought up clues that were never
solved in season
solved,
1.
Yeah, as if to say there's somebody behind lots of things.
Yeah.
That would be good. I would like that. I would like it to not... If it's going to end, I don't want it to just end on this year's mystery.
Yeah, I agree.
yeah, Nathan no, Lane is back
I think
again.
It looks good. Yeah, I'm excited about that.
He's so good in this series. So
yeah, he is. He's always good.
Yeah, but he is always good. We saw a good play with him where he played like a kind of heavy... I think it was called My Home or... Pictures from Home.
Mm.
He plays like a dad, whatever, like an older dad. But he's so like scary in Only Murders in the
Building. Yeah,
he's
like, threatening.
He's such a heavy. Yeah.
He's really good in the Gilded Age too.
Yo, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know he was in that.
Yeah, the Gilded Age is all Broadway people.
Is that
somebody?
Right?
I had a Gilded Age girly summer because it was on all summer. And it had its best season ever.
Oh, really?
And there've been just like been great memes about it this summer. And somebody tweeted like. The Gilded Age was designed for drama kids who also got a 5 on their AP US history exam. Because that's like literally what it is.
Is it true that it's a show where nothing happens at all?
Sure, but it's like Downton Abbey
where nothing happens.
Yeah. The stakes are either incredibly low or incredibly high. Like one episode will be about like, Are you going to go to the New York Academy of Music, or are you going to go to the New Metropolitan Opera House? And that's the drama. And then in the next episode, somebody shot. Like, it's so crazy. But it's soapy, but I like it, you know, as Billy
Eichner said. In what?
on New Girl.
New Girl. Man, I'm drunk at work. speaking of that, there's a third Downton Abbey film coming out.
I saw that, and they are really pushing it into the future. It's like the 1930s, it looks
like. Yeah, and Maggie Smith is gone in real life, so, and she died in the second movie, spoiler alert.
I never saw the movies.
I've only seen the movies.
You never watched Downton Abbey, the show?
No.
I saw the first couple seasons.
Jen's a big fan.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun. That Julian Fellowes, those shows are fun. It's like candy. It's fun costumes and and sassiness, and it's just a fun time.
Okay.
Fun class division, you know.
You know, upstairs, downstairs.
Upstairs, downstairs stuff.
All right, so our next trailer is Chain Reaction. This is a documentary film that's coming out that is about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's some of the talking heads in it are Patton Oswalt, Stephen King, which are two people I like hearing their opinions.
I love Stephen King.
I love Stephen King. I like Patton Oswalt a lot too.
I like him. I think
he's a great comic. I liked his first book, and he's just smart. He has a good understanding of media and stuff. And you know, this movie's doing what we do here sometimes at PCMC, which is it's elevating something. It sort of seems like the movie's like, you know, yes, this is a very popular horror movie. This is very well known, but like maybe it's even more important than we're giving it credit for.
Yeah, I kind of felt like when I was watching it, I think it looks great, but I had the thought when I was watching it that I feel like there's this new crop of, or maybe it's not new, but like relatively new crop of documentaries that are not really investigative.
Yeah.
They're not really behind the scenes-ish.
Yeah.
They're just kind of like what, like you said, like what we do. They're almost like podcasts as documentaries where it's like, let's just get a bunch of people talking about how this has had an influence on them. Like a bunch of people you know and you like.
Yeah.
This one thing they all really like.
Yeah.
Let's re-examine that thing. And I think that's great.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But what's funny is then at the end of the trailer, it said from the director of
Oz Lynch.
I was like, oh, what's that?
You've never seen that?
Never told me about that.
I
looked it up and I was like, oh, I want to see this. I really want to watch Oz.
It's really good, and it's also like a really good movie, which makes me feel like this is going to be really good too. Yeah, Lynch Oz is just, there are Wizard of Oz illusions in all of Lynch's work.
And I knew that.
And it just connects the two and reads them through each other. It's very academic in a way.
I'm really excited about that. Is that streaming?
It was on Criterion. I don't know. You could probably get it on Amazon.
Okay. Yeah, I'm excited about that. But this looks really good.
Well, there's three beats in this trailer, and all three do the same thing, which is compare it to a more well-regarded work of art.
Yeah.
Patton Oswalt compares it to Nosferatu.
Mm-hmm.
There's a female talking head that compares it to Francis Bacon.
Yeah.
And then King compares it to Blood Meridian.
Have you ever read Blood Meridian?
No, I haven't.
Neither have I.
I've never read anything from that author.
You never read any Cormac McCarthy?
No.
Not even The Road?
No.
That's his most popular, I'd say. He's good. I mean, The Road is really good.
Yeah. I've heard Blood Meridian's really good.
Yeah, too. I've heard Blood Meridian's his masterpiece.
So this looks good. I think it isn't. You know, I've become interested in films or pieces that stand at the crossroads of recognized genres.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for Halloween this year, you and me are going to talk about a movie that I feel like is stuck in between two time periods and two genres.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel the way about Texas Chainsaw, because it's 70s gritty. It's got one foot in that, but it also has one foot in slasher, but it's before all those other slashers.
Right.
And it's sort of, it's put in bed with a bunch of other things, but it doesn't totally fit with all of them either.
Right.
So yeah, I'm excited to see this.
Yeah, I think it looks really good.
I also like this thing where, and I don't know if I'm just guessing from the trailer, it looks like there's only like five talking heads. Like they picked like a good, interesting little group of people. Mm-hmm. And I always love when they do that. Like, have you ever seen it's a really famous documentary, The Times of Harvey Milk?
Yeah.
In that one, instead of like interviewing anyone he was friends with, like they interview like one union guy that knew him, mm-hmm. who's like super straight. He's like, I thought he was a good guy. And then like a bunch of other random people, but it's just them.
Yeah.
And it's such a smart way to get at Milk.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like when they do that. I feel like they rarely do that, but I like when they do that.
Well, I recently watched Disclosure.
I've never seen that.
It's the documentary about like depictions of trans people in media.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that does a similar thing. Like it's not only five, but it's a panel of people that they keep coming back to. Like one of them's Laverne Cox, and
okay, yeah, yeah.
And a lot of it has to do with like how it impressed upon them watching it growing up. Mm-hmm. And they talk about the film we're going to talk about for the Halloween episode, which we'll keep a secret. They talk about Ace Ventura and like how the ending of Ace Ventura is.
It really kills it because it's an otherwise charming movie.
Yeah. They talk about a lot, but it does a similar thing where it's really just, it's a bunch of well-known, well-regarded people. Some of them are insiders, some of them aren't, talking about one aspect of media and their personal relationship it, which I think is really interesting. And it's, you know, obviously it's kind of, like you said, it's like why we listen to podcasts. It's like,
There's something
interesting. There's something about that format.
There's something really parasocial about it too.
Oh yeah.
Like people love Stephen King. People love his Twitter. Well, he's not on Twitter anymore, but people love him online. People love, you know, he's become as interesting a public figure as he is an author. And maybe of late, more interesting as a public figure. That's what I was going to
say. Like, he has been around forever and has had, millions of loyal readers forever. Yeah. But it feels like just, honestly, since Trump took office, he's become, like, very, publicly political in a way that he never was forever.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he's turned off a lot of people, too.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But he's become much more of like a figure himself in the last 10 years.
Yeah. And also since he wrote Dance Macabre.
Yeah.
Dance Macabre. I feel like he is this expert.
Yeah.
Of horror.
He used to, if you watch his old interviews and stuff from like the 90s, he used to like play this persona of like, oh, I'm a creepy guy.
Yeah.
But I think he's given up the ghost now, and he's just like, I'm actually just like a normal guy from New England. I had drinking and drug problems. I'm really political, and you know, like,
yeah.
I'm really smart. You know, like he's just being himself.
Yeah. Well, he probably had an early like public relations person who's like, you're a fucking weirdo.
Yeah. Like lean into that.
Lean into your weirdness.
Because I remember watching, I was into him as a kid. I was really into him. And I remember watching an interview with him where he was like, I have a stuffed spider that I put on top of my computer screen. And it.
Right. He talks about that in,
imbues all the creepiness. He talks about that in
writing too.
Yeah. And it's like, it felt schlocky. And like, even as a kid, I was like, is this real? Like
he was selling books.
Yeah, exactly.
He was just trying to sell some books.
Yeah.
All right, so the next trailer we looked at is Him.
Yeah. I'm so excited about this movie.
Oh, yeah? Okay, tell me. Take it away.
My first thought was like, okay, so this is Black Swan, but about athletes.
Ooh, interesting, yeah.
I think there's a lot of reasons why I'm attracted to this movie. First of all, because the lead is very attractive.
Sure.
But also because as someone who's been in education for a long time and has worked with young athletes, there is something predatory, very predatory, about the way young athletes are treated.
Right.
By the adults in their lives, sometimes even their parents, because they see them as...
Well, it's like Marie Antoinette, right? You love Marie Antoinette.
Yeah.
It's like, we're going to laud you and be like, you're great, but really we need something.
You're the greatest thing. But really, you're our meal ticket kind of a thing. And then it's also, I'm just fascinated by it in general.
Americans super concerned with your body.
With your body, right. But not your, maybe mind. Not your mind. Right, no. Exactly. It's also part of the reason why I'm so fascinated by the Aaron Hernandez story. Because he had a similar kind of story and then ended up becoming a murderer.
Yeah.
Even though he, like an NFL player, famous NFL player becomes a mass murderer.
Right.
And so the teaser hooked my interest. And it also feels fresh because it's like, have we ever done like a horror sports movie before? No, not that I can think of.
No, not that I can
think of. And then I watched this full trailer, well, and it goes...
Well, there's a shitty movie a couple years ago called Dark Match, which is like a horror wrestling movie.
Okay, I've never seen that. but then I watched this full trailer, and I was like, wow, this is really going to explore a lot of themes. Marlon Wayans looks like he's giving an amazing performance.
First of all, when did he become an elder statesman?
But like his...
Did you see the Aretha Franklin biopic?
No.
He plays her husband, who's like this horrible, vicious,
I knew
abusive
that her, yeah.
person. And he's so terrifying in that.
He's having a renaissance.
Yeah. Well, I think they're coming back to do more scary movies after being kicked out by Weinstein.
Don't Eddie Murphy this, Marlon. This is like when Eddie Murphy was about to get an Oscar and then he made Norbit. And they were like, let's not give him that Oscar.
But he's great. He's turned out to be incredible.
His performance is going to be incredible. I'm excited to see how they explore. Like, obviously, this is allegorical, right?
Sure.
But there's stuff, there are images in it that I find so arresting. Like when they show them butting heads and you see their brains shaking in their skulls.
Yeah, you see the x-ray of their brain. Right. Especially, so it's got to be about.
Yeah, especially in light of recent events.
Yeah.
Right? With like how we are seeing as a society, like what CTE does to people.
Yeah.
Like it just looks really, really, like really good, I think.
Yeah, I don't know what to expect from it. It's produced by Jordan Peele, which gives you an idea of like where its head might be.
But he's become like a kingmaker sort of.
Yeah,
it's like it's got his stamp, so you know it's gonna have a kind of vibe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it certainly has very weird imagery. Some imagery reminds me a little bit of like things you see on like Severance. I wonder if it's gonna be all about the concussions or. That's just one of many things that it's about.
I'm getting the feeling it's going to be...
Because class is obviously going to be a part of it.
One of many things. Yeah, and obviously that's... Yeah.
Yeah.
Class and race, I think.
Yeah, and this idea of violence and, like, feeling pain. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a part in the trailer where, you know, I don't know what you call it, that machine that, like, you put a ball in and it, like, shoots it out. So you can, during practice, like, they're just standing in front of it and letting it, like, hit them in the face.
Well, he's having him catch the ball, and every time he misses it, a ball hits his teammate in the face.
Uh-huh.
So, it's like, that's his punt. He's operating out of fear and adrenaline. Like, this coach is obviously pushing him to be, like, the best.
Yeah.
And I love that it's called him, because that's such, like, a thing. Like, oh, I'm him. I'm the GOAT. I'm the greatest. And then at the end, I like when you see it says him, and then he's kind of standing like Jesus.
Yeah.
The imagery alone looks like really fucking cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I think this is going to be really good. I hope it is.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Horror's been really good lately. Sinners was really good. I can't think of anything else.
Socially conscious
Weapons,
horror.
I still haven't seen Weapons, but I heard Weapons is really, really good.
Yeah, me too.
I think the Osgood Perkins stuff has been good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe Fear thrives under fascism.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I just said socially conscious horror, but I don't know if that's totally true. I think some of these, like, I feel like Long Legs, I don't know if that was that socially conscious.
No,
I think
not
it
at
was
all.
Just let's like a return to just pure terror.
Yeah, it's just, yeah.
But then there have also been some other ones that have been really good that have been like socially conscious.
Sure, for sure. I think Sinners has something to say about race, for sure.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, well, that's why horror is why I love horror as a genre, because it's just, even when it's not trying to say something, it's saying something. It can't help but not.
Right.
It's been a good run for horror lately.
I also feel like horror is like maybe the only genre where you could still get original storytelling right now.
Sure.
In film, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because, I mean, obviously, like, if you want real narrative, you go to TV now.
Yeah.
And streaming. But there are still good horror movies being made.
Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of that, let's talk about The Carpenter's Son, which I only heard about recently, and I can't believe this is a thing, and I also can't wait for people to be mad about it.
Oh, they're going to be so mad about it.
This is a Jesus horror movie.
Well, Nick Cage plays Joseph.
Oh, I thought he was Jesus. No, he's Joseph.
He's Joseph. and it's and Jesus is his son.
Oh.
And that's the carpenter's son.
Fuck.
And I think it's only a teaser trailer.
It's very little in it, but there's scary.
But it's like, I guess imagery. The idea is like, if your kid is God,
yeah,
that also might manifest like as really scary.
Yeah.
And it looks like it's going to explore that.
It seems a really interesting idea. I can't wait for Fox News to completely not get
they're
it.
They're going
to
lose their fucking minds.
And just not get it even a little bit. And I love that Nick Cage is in it. I love that he'd do it. I'm sure there's plenty of other people that would not touch this movie.
Oh, of course not.
But he's like, yeah, I'll do it.
Who are you going to get? Jim Caviezel?
That guy turned out to think he was Jesus.
Yeah. Yes, he did.
He pulled a fucking Johnny Weissmuller or whatever. Uh-huh. The guy who played Tarzan. Yeah. Like, he thinks he... like
yeah, he said something about, I have the same initials as him.
Oh, wow. Can you imagine such a thing?
Like, you do know Christ was not his last name, right?
Oh, man. So that's just
it was giving me Exorcist vibes.
Yeah, well, we're in the desert. And we see like a creepy guy like
the beginning of the Exorcist. Yeah.
Yes. And Joseph's like, what the fuck is that? We see somebody with like a shroud over their face, like screaming.
Well, that when he saw the guy in the for a second, I was like, is this supposed to be like is that like the Annunciation?
See, I don't know enough about religion.
So the Annunciation, well, that's Mary, I guess, is when like the angel like tells Mary you're gonna have this.
Oh, maybe.
God.
Do you think
like would that be? You could tell that story as a horror.
I was just gonna ask you. Do you think they're going to add stuff, or there's enough weirdness in the actual story that you could just pitch it in
a
horror
think
bend?
I think there's just enough weirdness in the story that it could be told as like, oh my god, this traumatic, terrifying thing.
You're right.
Like an angel told me I'm going to give birth to the Son of God.
Yeah.
Like that's fucking scary.
Yeah. And we don't even know what ibuprofen is.
right.
I'm and then, just the daringness of it.
Yeah, it looks crazy.
I mean, anytime they make any film about Christ, people have opinions.
And they sure do.
And the last trailer, speaking of Christ, is Masters of the Universe. This is not a trailer. It was the title reveal.
In many languages.
Yes, and it's also not a reveal because we knew it was called Master Universe, so it's sort of like a font reveal.
Yeah, it looks like the original font, right? Like the cartoon font?
It's the font they've been using for the last couple of years for the toys.
Okay.
All right, so the one takeaway as a Master Universe fan, I got the tattoo on my wrist, is that it gives you a bit of the theme from the cartoon, but like with a good like film movie orchestra. So that's the exciting thing for fans. Like, oh shit, the theme. Especially because early on there was some things that came out that made fans get scared. One was set photos of him in like normal clothes on Earth. And people were like, well, why is he on Earth? That was a problem with the first movie. Or is this going to be like Barbie? Like, what are you doing? And since then, they've been trying hard with their announcements and leaks and stuff to be like, no, this is going to be really faithful to the cartoon and the toys and stuff. So we'll see.
Yeah. Jury's out on whether or not I'll see this.
Well, you know,
but if it looks fun, I'll see it.
I was talking to patron saint of the show, Emilio Sparks, recently about it. And I was like, I feel good about it. And he was like, I'm not going to be on board until I see an image of Jared Leto as Skeletor.
Oh, Jared Leto's in it?
Yeah.
I'm out.
Right.
I hate Jared Leto.
They're like, who can we get to ruin a classic villain?
Yeah. Who's the most unlikable person on Earth?
Who's someone that, like a classic villain, but, like, will ruin it? Oh, yeah. The guy who did the worst Joker. Let's let him be
God.
The worst Skeletor.
I forgot he was even the... I just hate his face.
Yeah, I don't like him.
Remember when he was like... away
you're
on
like
a,
what's his name?
Who?
The character. You're like the narrator from. Remember, he beats the shit out of him because he's like something about his face I want to destroy.
Oh yeah, yeah. From American Psycho.
No, Fight Club.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, he's in that too.
Yeah.
He's also in American Psycho.
Yes, he is.
As a like a fucking like little douche.
He's the one who dies. Is he the one who dies in the scene with the fucking Susu Studio?
I think so.
where he's like, oh, plays the radio? I think he is.
The sex worker is there too.
Oh, I don't remember.
I don't remember. No, Susudio is like, he's having sex and he's like looking at himself in the mirror.
Or is it Hip to Be Square? I don't know.
Oh, I think it's Hip to Be Square.
Yeah, okay.
He's wearing like a raincoat.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, I just don't like him. Remember when he was like on a peyote trip and he was like, oh, there's a pandemic. What?
So yeah, I agree with Emilio. I've got to see an image of what he looks like as Skeletor before I could co-sign any excitement with this movie.
Yeah, I get that. Totally.
All right. Well, gosh darn it. We just talked about some trailers. Let's take a break. We'll come back with the chill sesh. Welcome back. This is the chill sesh. This is the shush where we chill. Can I tell you, Anthony, I just used your bathroom. And you have a really clean bathroom.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for thanking me, because you should feel good about what I just said. Because I have pretty serious OCD, and bathrooms are a big thing for me. Mm-hmm. And I felt comfortable in your bathroom.
That makes me feel great.
You should feel great.
Thank you.
There's nothing I respect more than a clean bathroom.
This is a very Larry David right now.
No, it's true. It's true. No, my OCD, traveling is a big thing for me. I bring my own blankets and pillows and stuff.
Really?
Yeah. I don't.
I just don't think about it.
If I were a rock star and I could like have things that you like, you know what I mean? Everywhere I go, I'd want a fresh mattress. I'd want a new bed made for me.
That would be your ask.
Be my rider. Yeah. You know, you give me a new mattress. Anyways, so congratulations on your bathroom.
Thank you very much.
So this is the chill sesh. This is the sesh where we chill. What have you been chilling with?
Well, I think you know, because I've been texting you about it.
Yeah.
I have been chilling with an audiobook
mm-hmm.
that just dropped.
Yes.
Called Your Favorite Scary Movie.
I tried to pick it up and it was sold out at a Barnes & Noble.
It's all the rage. It's pretty popular.
Very exciting. A lot of millennials, I guess, are reading this book.
Yeah. I audiobook from time to time. Not a lot. But this one, I'm reading a couple of other books right now. So I was like, I don't want to pick up another book.
Sure.
So let me listen to it, because I'm sure it's not that much of a heavy, like, you know,
yeah.
load. So I can just listen, you know, as I drive, you know, leisurely. And I was sold because the audiobook is read by Roger L. Jackson.
All right. Does he do the voice?
He does the voice when he reads the chapter titles.
Incredible. But he's doing... feel like you'd get real sick of the voice if everything were like that.
But he's got a great... He's like a voice actor.
Yeah.
So he does a good job, especially in a book like this where it's a lot of quotes from people, like differentiating voices from each other.
Does he do like impressions?
He doesn't do impressions, but like he'll change his tone or his like cadence to...
Does he do like a fastidious tone for... Wes Craven?
He does. He does like a professorly tone for Wes Craven.
That's awesome.
And then when he does Jamie Kennedy, he does like a kind of like
incredible
tone. But the chapter titles, it'll be like Chapter One, A New Kind of Horror. It's
incredible.
Really great.
And fucking incredible.
So I'm like halfway through it. I'm loving it. I'm a little bit more than halfway through it. It really is not groundbreaking in any way.
Well, if we've done an episode on every Scream movie.
If you weren't as much of a diehard Scream fan as we were, there'd be some more to learn. But it's really more like
a no thank you credit, which is very rare.
Yeah. It's the original movie.
The first movie has
thanks whatsoever to the school board.
Yeah.
That they tell that she the author is a woman. She tells that story. But it's, I keep saying he or they because it's Roger L. Jackson.
Voice?
Yeah.
Yeah.
but it's basically like a love letter to the franchise and a behind the scenes look at just how all the movies are made. I appreciate
it
that
went
it's
all
the whole,
way up to now.
It's the whole series from beginning to now.
Okay.
And I learned a couple of things that I didn't know before. And it's also just cool to hear the behind the scenes. It does that thing sometimes that books and documentaries do of like being a little too like, not critical, so it'll be like everybody in the world loves Wes Craven, nobody says a bad word about him, which like I'm sure he's a fantastic guy, but like it doesn't get into the nitty-gritty. It's just like
yeah
these people are great, this was a great experience. What it What I'm appreciating is it doesn't shy away from shitting on the Weinsteins.
Nice.
Basically, the biggest thing...
What's to lose by doing that?
Of course, at this point, no, nothing.
Do they talk about
Harvey?
Me Too?
Yes.
Because she was raped during...
She gets... Yeah. So, okay. This is one issue I have with that is that she doesn't talk about Rose McGowan saying that she was raped during Scream.
Okay.
But she does explicitly talk about the Me Too movement and Harvey Weinstein, but she does it in relation to Scream 3, because Scream 3 is like about that.
Sure. Yeah.
And she's like, it's really a movie that's very meta to begin with becomes even more meta when you consider what Harvey Weinstein did in real life.
Right.
But
up
to this point, at least, maybe she'll get to it a little bit later, but up to this point, she hasn't mentioned Rose McGowan's allegations that she was raped by him during Scream.
Right.
She does, though, talk about... Here's a piece of news that I shared with you that really upset me. The name Scream was Harvey Weinstein's idea. The title Scream.
Okay.
It was a scary movie throughout all of production. Right. Then the Weinsteins were like, we hate that name. And then Harvey was like, let's call it Scream after the Michael Jackson song.
Oh, after the Michael Jackson song. Yeah. Interesting. Not after the Edward Munch painting.
No.
Whatever. Broken clocks right twice a day.
The biggest thing that I've taken away from this in terms of like learning about the behind the scenes is that the Weinsteins are just pieces of shit. And
you don't hear enough about Bob. What's
his
deal?
He's also a piece of shit. The theme from the beginning is we're going to try to swindle you and pay you as little as possible to give us a hit. Mm. And then, so Scream 1, it was like, we don't care that you're Wes Craven. This needs to be good. Mm-hmm. And then they had to, like, at one point they had to show like almost fully cut version of it earlier than they normally would of the opening scene to prove to Bob Weinstein that this movie was worth funding.
Uh-huh.
Because he was like, I don't think you need all this money.
Uh-huh.
Then they saw that scene and they were like, okay, fine. It looks like you're doing a good job. Then Scream 1 became a massive hit and they were like, you must immediately make Scream 2. So that's why Scream 2 comes out less than a year after Scream 1.
Less than a year later.
So it's like, from the time... So Scream, I'm also learning. I'm not up to the newer ones yet. I just finished listening to Scream 4.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to get into the new wave of 4, 5, 6, and 7. But up to Scream, from Scream to Scream 4, the only one that was fully realized before it began production was the original.
Yeah.
Scream 2, 3, and 4 were all in production while being written. All three of them.
Wow.
And were all changed multiple times throughout production, which would explain why there are so many like plot holes and like dropped threads in those movies because they were being rewritten constantly.
Yeah.
They acknowledge that Scream 3 is weak.
Yeah.
And that everybody involved knows it's weak.
Yeah.
And the most disappointing to learn as a fan of Scream 4 was that Scream 4 sounds like it was a real nightmare for everybody.
Really? Why?
Because Kevin Williamson had the idea for it. And Kevin Williamson wanted... So Kevin Williamson had the idea for Scream 3. And he wanted to do something totally different. And they were like, we don't need you. At this point, we know what the formula of this movie is. And we could do it without you.
Okay.
And he was like, I'm busy making movies for you. Like, I'm making Teaching Mrs. Tingle. I'm making The Faculty. I'm making all this stuff for Dimension. It's not like I'm working for somebody else. Right. I'm working for you. And now you're trying to take away my baby from me.
Right.
And they were like, well, Scream 3 needs to be made by this point. So, like, we'll get somebody else. And at one point during production, Wes Craven called Kevin Williamson and was like, I just want to let you know as a friend. Like, they just sent me pages from another writer. Like, Kevin Williamson didn't know that they hired another screenwriter. So then he walked away.
Okay.
And then that's why it's like partially Aaron Kruger, partially Kevin Williamson. And then he had the idea for 4. He convinced Wes to make it because by the time 4 came around, it had been like 10 years since the trilogy ended. They took it to Dimension. They pitched it to Dimension. They proved that it could be successful. Dimension said okay. And then they tried to rush it and rush it and rush it. And then went right back to the same old, we could do this without you, to Kevin Williamson and even Wes Craven. We don't need to pay you that much. We could do this without you. So everyone was really resentful. And I told you I was going to tell you this story. I didn't realize until I learned it from the book. The only Scream movie that doesn't have Red Right Hand in it is Scream 4 because they didn't want to pay. And the artist was like, this is iconic. It's a part of Scream. It needs,
he wrote
it
a needs version to, for free yes, with new yes. with new lyrics.
It needs to be in it. We pay me what I deserve. What I deserve. And they said no. So they that's why why it's not in Scream 4. It only came back after they switched over to Paramount.
The timeline is shaky. The Weinsteins are still very much in charge during Scream 4.
Yeah. Scream 4 is the last one that was Dimension and the Weinsteins. Because it's 2010.
Right.
And then...
did they talk about... Because that was supposed to do... There's really more after that.
Yes.
Why did that not lead to a 5 and 6 and...
Because it was... Even though it was successful, it was... It fell below projection. Like, it wasn't as successful as it was supposed to be. The original idea was that Jill was supposed to survive Scream 4.
Yeah.
And then go to college in Scream 5. And no one would know her secret because Sydney was dead.
So that's so smart.
And then another killer is like, I know you're a killer. And then it's Ghostface versus Ghostface.
That would have been so good.
Yeah.
That would have been great.
Yeah, I think...
I love 4.
I love 4 too. I think it's really good despite all of that stuff that was going on behind the scenes. Behind the scenes.
There were Wizard of Oz, right? There were great movies that were complete shit shows behind the scenes that somehow come together.
So it sounds like, I'm not up to this part yet, but it sounds like eventually the Weinsteins fall out, Miramax dissolves, Dimension is dropped, and then it sounds like Radio Silence are going to be the ones to bring it back with Blumhouse and Paramount.
You know, I don't know if they talk about this in the book, but going back to the 90s, when the Weinsteins first sort of came on the scene and Miramax first came on the scene, they were like indie people.
Well, that's
they were like not the big moguls,
right?
Then they became that thing.
Exactly. So they talk about that. So Miramax, the first Scream was is technically an independent film. It was made by Woods Production, which was like a small production company, and then it was acquired by Miramax. But they were a prestige indie label, so they were like, let's run it under Dimension, which is our genre label. And then that built Scream really launched Dimension.
Right.
And then they also did a shitty thing by making the Scary Movie franchise under Dimension.
And letting them have the
name because of the names, they had the name Scary Movie, they used it.
Yeah.
And apparently Wes Craven was really mad because he was like, they basically just took the movie that made them a lot of money that we made, did it again, but like stupid and spoofy, didn't give us a dime, and like took all of our IP.
Wow, yeah, that's true.
So they had their cake and eat it too because they made Scream and then they made the spoof of Scream and made money on both of them.
Right.
And then they said that that's another reason why they felt like Scream 4 struggled, because when Scream 4 came out, Scary Movie was still more relevant. So they were like, it was an uphill battle because now Ghostface was associated with like stupid comedy. So it was hard to make him scary again.
That's really true. Yeah.
So it was really, it's interesting. It's a good read. It's a great listen. I don't know if it'd be as good of a read. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it would be.
I like a breezy read before bed.
This is that.
I like a breezy nonfiction before bed.
Yeah.
Like right now I don't remember what it's called, but I'm reading some book about like this comedy writer and his history with video games and shit. Mm-hmm. I'm also reading a very harrowing book that I was telling you a little bit about. It's called Let's Go Play at the Adams. It was written by Mendel W. Johnson. It's the only book that person ever published. And for most of their career, they just like wrote like boat reviews for like a boat magazine or whatever. And it's under the Paperbacks from Hell imprint.
So it was published in the 70s or 80s. And now it's reprinted under the...
Yeah,
new
Paperbacks from Hell. Right. So there was a nonfiction book some years ago called Paperbacks from Hell, written by Grady Hendrix, who also wrote like My Best Friend's Exorcism and How to Sell a Haunted House. And it's just about like every chapter is like begins with like a big book like The Godfather or The Exorcist or Jaws, and then like all the kind of ripoffs. And basically it was a time where paperbacks were a big deal, and these cheap little like lurid paperbacks were, you know, it's Paperbacks from Hell. It's a really, really interesting book. But now they're starting to reprint these old books. This book, Let's Go Play at the Adams, apparently has been out of print for a long time, but has an infamy around it, and like you could find like original copies on eBay for like, you know, $600 or something like that. And Paperbacks from Hell, having read it, like a lot of it's like silly shit. So I was like, oh, this is gonna be this weird campy thing, and it's not. It's
so scary.
But it isn't. It's there's nothing spooky about it. There's nothing gothic about it. And even like the characters themselves aren't scary. It's just it's like a banality of evil type thing. Mm-hmm. It's about a babysitter and a group of kids. And I'll spoil the whole thing for you right now.
Great.
Because I spoiled it for myself. I'll get to that. It's about a babysitter and a group of kids, and she's like watching them for 2 weeks, and like they live in a country house while the mom and dad are away in Europe. And they chloroform her and tie her to a bed, and they have her tied up. And she's like, why? And they're like, this is just a game. We're playing a game. And we learn more about who she is. We learn more about the kids and their lives. And some are really fucked up. Some are just not. Some are starting to feel guilty, but they're pressured by each other to and they just keep going. And like, I kept waiting for, and maybe I'm only like halfway through, so maybe it'll get here. But I kept waiting for a moment where like somebody was like, this was my evil plan. But no, it's just this banal, like, we're playing a game. Mm-hmm. You know, the most you ever get is they'll be like, grown-ups have all the power, and we want to have the power.
So are they like, is she like starving?
No, they're feeding her like once a day.
Okay.
The on the cover, it actually says a novel of lingering horror.
Oh, God.
They feed her once a day. They take her to the bathroom once a day. They have a rope around her neck, so they guide her to and from the bathroom. I just got to a point in the middle of the book where one of the older kids raped her.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Which is, by the way, it's lingering is so right, because I didn't think it was going to get there. But because it starts as it's like a game. It's so slow. The way the stakes get higher and higher and higher. The author was supposedly very inspired by Lord of the Flies.
So the way that Paperbacks from Hell is structured is every chapter is a classic horror. And
I believe.
All the mass market copycats.
I believe, although I don't know what this would be a copy.
That's what I'm asking. Like,
I don't remember.
Would it be? Okay.
Do you have it?
I do have it.
It's up there.
Yeah.
We're going to the shelf now.
We're going to the Urtext.
We're going to here. We're in Anthony's salon, and we are...
So this is Paperback from Hell. Is it?
Let's look. Is
there all the ones that are being published even in there?
Oh yeah, but sure. But there's way more in here than being published. No, that's the epilogue. God, this is such a good book. I gotta reread this. I don't want to fuck up your puzzle.
We have a delightful puzzle here.
Puzzle going on here
on the desk.
Some fucking Thomas Kincaid bullshit. Where? Is
there like an index?
No, there isn't. There's a... Oh, wait, maybe there is. Hold on. Yes, index. So let's go play at the Adams.
What you're listening to is the sound of research.
Ah, yes.
Happening.
We're
looking through many, many card catalogs.
Page 62 to 63. Very good. All right, let's
get there. We're flipping to the page.
God, I really got to reread this.
It's a great book. It's a great like coffee table book.
Yeah. I admire someone like him.
Oh, there it is. There it is.
And John Green, mm-hmm. who could be good authors and good nonfiction writers. Yeah. So what, to answer your question, what chapter is this?
Is it about like evil kids?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's evil kids.
Evil kids.
I see The Omen.
The Omen was.
The Omen is the main book.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is evil
so,
kids.
Yeah, so those of you who haven't read it, Paperbacks from Hell is about like those like mass market trade paperbacks from the 70s and 80s that were like really cheap and were usually knockoffs of more popular
texts.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's interesting because there's nothing demonic about these kids. These kids are so, well, like one of the kids is way too into it. He's like a little weirdo, but like for the most part, they just seem like kids. That's what's disturbing to me. So I did something that I had to do, which is I was reading it at night and I was feeling myself get anxious Because every time the main character, the babysitter, would have like an idea of maybe getting herself out of it, I would get hopeful.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd feel dashed. So I said, you know what? I had skipped the intro because there's a foreword written by Grady Hendrix. And it says, mm-hmm. if you haven't read it, don't read this yet. Mm-hmm. I said, I got to go back and read it. So I read it and I found out she does die. They do kill her.
Jesus.
Yeah. And I needed that. And no, I'm sure someone would go, well, you've deprived yourself.
But you had that moment early. It's the same thing.
Right.
Yeah.
I couldn't take it. I'm sorry, I couldn't. I'm not a fast enough reader. Like now that I know that it's not going to happen,
She's not going to get out.
I can abandon hope. She isn't going to get out of this. It'll be easier. It's still a hard read.
Mm-hmm.
It's a surprisingly hard read.
God, I gotta read it.
Some of the reviews for when it came out are so scathing. Of like, this is trash. I threw this book away when I finished it. You know, people call it misogynistic, and it is. And people call it all sorts of horrible things. The writer was a Republican, but he had a very interesting thing. He said the babysitter's liberals, okay, but the Republicans are the parents that you don't see at all.
Mm.
And the kids are the silent majority, like the real people.
God.
Which is like...
Right now, that hits really
But it
different.
Doesn't. It doesn't really link up with our contemporary conservative ideas.
No.
Because he's basically saying the world is terrible,
mm-hmm.
and liberals are stupid for thinking anything could be good. Because this book
And Republicans are just like out.
And Republicans are just like out of it. It's really interesting.
That is interesting.
But also, like, as Grady Hendrix points out in his foreword, it's more than a metaphor because the author was an alcoholic. The author talks about how he was increasingly drinking as he was writing it because he was like, I really liked the babysitter and I wanted her to get out of it. And I was drinking more because I didn't like what was coming out of the typewriter. And I got to a point where it was like, I could either save her or save the book. So I saved the book.
Jesus.
And it's the only book he ever published.
Wow.
Isn't that crazy? Imagine you had someone in your family that they published one book ever. You're like, oh, really? And it's this fucking book?
Yeah.
It's like, Jesus Christ.
And I'm sure like he wasn't paid much for it either.
Oh, I'm sure not.
Yeah.
I'm sure not.
These were just like drugstore paperbacks.
Yeah. It's got a cool lurid cover of the babysitter tied up in a chair. I was not prepared for what it was.
You thought it was gonna be like campy fun.
Yeah, because like people always reference this, there's like a Nazi elves book in there.
Yeah,
there's a lot. So it's like, oh, this is gonna be camp bullshit. And I mean, part of me feels cool. I think it's cool that this book was such a It wasn't famous by any stretch, but it was like a hot topic and it went away, and it's cool that Quirk has published it again. Mm. I think it's cool that Grady Hendrix is giving these books a second life.
Yeah.
If you go on Goodreads, it's got, and Goodreads I have problems with, because if you review every book you read, you're a weirdo.
There's also a lot of paid people on Goodreads.
And there's also like a lot of kids that only care about his YA.
Yeah.
But it has really good reviews on Goodreads. So it's so interesting that people seem to like it way more now. But that seems to be the trend, as Grady Hendrix said. Like, as the years have gone by, people have liked this book more and more.
Yeah.
No one wanted it in 1980 when it came out.
It's so interesting.
Yeah, it's really interesting. But I'm only reading it during the day now because it really puts you in a bad mindset.
Yikes.
It's like a train wreck coming.
Oh.
And it's like, you can't even be like, oh, these kids are evil, because they're not. It's just fucking.
It's just like humanity is fucking.
Yeah. Bad. It's a very dark. So that's what I'm chilling with, although it's not very chill. Well, you know why? And this is lovely. My birthday's coming up. And Jen was like, what do you want for your birthday? And I was like, I don't want you to spend a lot. Because she was like, you want to go see Broadway show or whatever? And I was like, no, I don't want you to spend a lot. And I was like, you know what I would really like? Let's take a little trip to the bookstore and I can pick out some books. And we did. And I picked out some books. I got a kid's book from the Halloween section called There's a Ghost in This House.
Oh, cute.
I love a picture book. Cheap art. There's cheap art that you can get. I got this book, Let's Go Play at the Addams. I got a science book that I was interested in called Your Inner Fish. And I got Horror Movie by Paul Tremblay, which I've heard good things about.
Yeah, I've heard good things about that too.
Paul Tremblay also did Cabin at the End of the World, which I haven't read, but I've seen the movie. So I picked up some spooky books. It was nice.
Very nice.
And yeah, I've been reading more lately and reading actual books more lately. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, yeah, you know what? This is worth talking about because this is PCMC and we talk about real shit. My job has been burning me out and reading has really been helping me center myself.
Mm-hmm.
Burnout's real.
Sure is. They say that reading, even if it's only 6 minutes a day, is really good for your mental health. Yeah.
I've heard reading anything. You can read the phone book. It's because it's like meditation.
It's meditative, yeah.
You're focusing, you're hyper-focusing on something, and exactly. That just alleviates stuff.
And it's your hope, but you're not hyper-focusing on your thoughts.
Yeah. You're like, instead of like turning it off or whatever, which is kind of impossible, you're like, the focus beam, you're putting it on something else.
Well, that's why I started doing puzzles, because my therapist recommended it.
Ah.
Because it's you have to focus outwardly for a long period of time.
Yeah, I bet. I felt that way about Lego, but I ran out of room. I ran out of room for Lego.
Well, because the thing with the puzzle is once it's done, you just break it apart. But Lego's
Lego,
like,
you're like, this is a model now.
Yeah.
You feel bad breaking it apart.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back with our obsessions. Welcome back to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm joined still by Anthony Bongiorno.
Sorry. still joined by Anthony.
This is Obsessions. I want to go first because I believe in mine, but I don't have a lot to say about it. It's not a strong segment, you might say.
Can I say one thing before you start?
Yeah.
I wrote this down because I didn't want to forget it, and I still fucking forgot it. When we were talking about the Scream book,
yeah,
they talked about Carrie Fisher's cameo in Scream 3. And you know how they, like, stars get to, like, demand things in their trailers?
Yeah.
Her trailer was filled with Fruit Loops and Diet Coke.
That's incredible.
That's very Carrie Fisher.
That's so her.
It's amazing. Anyway,
sorry. I was afraid you were going to say buckets of cocaine. Yeah.
No, Diet Coke.
That would have been... No, she loved Coke. She loved Diet Coke.
Yeah, she's a Diet Coke girly. I know.
Yeah.
We recognize each other.
My obsession is somebody that I just see on Reels and I just see on YouTube, and it's Lucy Darling.
Okay.
Lucy Darling is a magician / comedian, but she's also a character played by a performer.
So her name is not really Lucy Darling.
No, but you could go see Lucy Darling shows, and she kind of looks a little like Betty Boop and talks a little bit like Betty Boop. She has a sort of like... 20s-ish quality, but she's very funny and she does a lot of crowd work.
Hmm.
A lot of the clips you see of her online are her doing crowd work where she'll like talk to people in the audience, and it just seems like a delight. I really want to see her live.
Okay.
That's it, folks. Just look up the clips.
Lucy Darling.
You'll be enchanted.
That sounds good. That sounds cute.
Yeah.
I got it. She's on Reels, you say?
She's on all the things.
So that means she was on TikTok a year ago.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly right.
So that's it?
Yeah.
That's all you got.
I mean, it's true. Like, I see her
Sometimes you just don't have much to say, you know? No, that's good. I like when you find somebody talented on TikTok or Instagram or something. You're like, oh, there's somebody new to follow.
Yeah.
And I know that they're going to like produce funny content.
Yeah, when I see her shit, I'm like, there's another one. There's a good one.
And the best is then you get to, when you really like them, you get to do the deep dive into all their past stuff.
Yeah, I was hoping that you had known her too because I've had this conversation with a few other people and...
Let me look her up.
Some people be like, oh yeah, I know, I've seen her. So like, I feel like more and more people are seeing her.
Maybe if I looked her up. Lucy Darling.
Lucy Darling. And she's a magician.
I have never laid eyes on this woman. Okay, I see what you mean about the Betty Boop thing. So this is
her mic. By the way, the microphones are in her wig.
That's great. She's got a.
She does question and answer at the end of the show too. She was a magician first under her like real name, and then she came up with this character. And like now, this character is like more a comedian than a. Like she still does tricks, but it's that's like. Not the important
What's
part
like
of
her
the show.
Brand of comedy, like what is she, what kind of comedy? Does
she's
she
very sweet. She's a little bawdy. Like if there's like a tall gentleman, it doesn't matter what age. If there's a tall gentleman in the audience, she'll like act like she's attracted to them.
So it's a gentle comedy.
No. she'll, you know, she'll. It's hard to describe. What can I say? Yeah. Oh, her real name is Carissa Hendricks.
I'll check her out.
Check her out. I want to go see her live. It looks like her blast. Too? Yes. That's yes. Fine. That's all I got. Anyway, what's your obsession?
Mine is kind of a nothing also.
Oh, great.
this is really interesting for our listeners.
Well, they say in show business you want to end on a...
Mine is... Well, it's not that it's a nothing. It's just like I'm not that excited about it, but it is an obsession because I'm obsessively watching it.
Mm-hmm.
It's Euphoria.
Get the fuck out of here.
I know, which is so weird because I'm so late to the game. Did you watch it?
We watched two episodes and we were both like, we're too old. We're too old for this.
Okay, so that's how I feel. So
I would have liked it when I was the right age, but I'm like, nah.
It's also like at this point, like it came out like I feel like it's like one of those COVID shows. Like it came out like during 2020. It's already like 5 years old.
Is it really?
Yeah, and it's only had three. It's like on crazy long hiatus.
I found it very like melodramatic.
So here's the thing. I'm watching it. I started seeing clips of it on TikTok. And I was really, my way in was Alana Eubank because I saw
what an interesting way in.
I saw this one clip where like Sydney Sweeney's freaking out, yeah. And then she as the mother is like, Jesus Christ, she needs a fucking exorcism. And she's just so funny.
She's incredible.
So she's like the crazy like drunk put upon mom of Sydney Sweeney.
Yeah.
And she's a delight, and she's my favorite part of the show. She's so funny.
She's the best part of every show.
And the only likable character for me is Lexi, who's played by Maude Apatow, which is her other daughter.
Okay, right. Isn't she like the good girl?
She's the good one, yeah. So I'm finding it addictive. Like, I'm like, oh, I started watching it, and I got really into it. And then I watched season one, like, really fast. And then I was like, oh, I gotta, like, that thing of, like, I need more. I gotta watch season two. But while I'm watching it, I'm like, sometimes I'm riveted, and then other times I'm like, I hate these little fucks.
Yeah, yeah. I think I had a lot of I hate these little fucks.
And it's like, I don't believe in hate watching, but I think this is, like, the closest thing to hate watching I've ever done, where it's like, I like it. But I recognize that I don't like any of these characters. And I also don't know how the show wants me to feel about these kids.
I think if you're young enough, you're supposed to maybe identify with them.
But kids like that? I work with teenagers all the time. And I feel like they're like, oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's sort of a... It seems...
It's like almost hyper... It's almost like Bret Easton Ellis-y.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, disaffected youth.
Yeah.
Like, the kids are not all right kind of storytelling.
Yeah, it's a certain thing.
There's a lot of...
I could see its value.
There's a lot of nudity for a show about children.
Yeah. Yeah.
What makes me feel better is that they're all, like, in their 30s and 40s.
They have to be adults.
So, like, what's... Jacob Elordi is in it. And I'm like, you know, Jacob Elordi is so hot. Yeah, but on the show, he's a literal high schooler. And I'm like, I have weird feelings about this.
No, that's all right. That's pretend.
Yeah. But he's, like, 40 in real life.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's... I mean, it's good. And, I mean, it's not good. It's very watchable.
All right. How did you make this step from clips online to I'm going to put on an episode?
Because I've heard people talking about it for years, and there's so many memes, you know, like the, is this fucking play about us?
Do
like
any contemporaries of yours watch it?
No.
Okay.
No.
Because I don't have any friends my age.
I'm alone in this.
Okay. Does Bobby watch it with you?
God, no.
It's just you.
It's just me.
Okay.
It's just during my like alone time.
Sure.
I don't know. I just put on the I put on the pilot, the first episode, and I was just like, oh, I don't know. I was looking for a new show, and then it kind of gripped me, and I was like, okay, I could watch this. And then like before I knew it, I had watched like the whole season, and then I was like, okay, now I guess I'm invested.
Yeah.
I also like the actors. I think like I don't like Sydney Sweeney, but I do think she's a good actress.
I
think she's pretty good on the show.
I think she's an okay actress. The thing that I liked from her was
she's good at playing like hysterical.
Was it Immaculate? What was the name of that movie she was in that was kind of like... It came out the same time as that new Omen movie, and it was basically the exact same plot.
Was she like a nun or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
And she was kind of behind making that. I like that, and I was really impressed by that, but... Mm. Her as a person...
No, she's horrible as a person.
I'm not much...
Sure. I like Zendaya. I think she's a good actress.
I like her too, but I felt myself... I don't know.
Speaking of Zendaya, did I tell you about Hugh Jackman?
No.
That should be my real obsession. We saw Hugh Jackman live.
Yeah, well, how was that?
It was... It charmed the pants off of everyone
what
in the crowd.
What was it, though?
Hugh Jackman has so much... As Janine said, he has so much Broadway in his heart.
Yeah.
It's a one-man... concert?
Okay.
Question mark.
Oh, he sings?
He sings. The whole time he's singing.
From his shows?
He sings a little Les Mis. He sings a little Music Man. He sings a lot of Greatest Showman because he had a lot to do with that creatively.
Okay.
But then he also he sang Sweet Caroline. I don't know. It was, we got the tickets for free and we were like, let's do it
because
they're really good seats. Get your money's worth. He's so handsome. He's so charming.
Oh, yeah.
The whole audience.
We saw the very last performance of Music Man.
Yeah, I know. And you said it was great, right?
Yeah. He's great.
The whole audience was smitten like little kittens.
Oh, of course.
And it was so many 50-year-old women cute. He was walking into the audience and people were grabbing his ass.
Of course.
It was just, it was a good time though. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But what did why did I start talking about? Oh, because Zendaya is in The Greatest Showman. So he did a lot of Greatest Showman. I don't know. I don't know what it was. I sat through it and I still don't know what it was.
It was an
evening with Hugh Jackman. And you know what? I would go again. I really would.
Good for him.
He's incredible.
He's incredible.
Even did some... he did a little talking about Wolverine.
What a star.
He did, you know what he did? He's a star. He's our last star. he did, I didn't see Wolverine and Deadpool, but apparently Deadpool does a Backstreet Boys dance in it.
Yes.
And so Hugh Jackman was like, I was jealous. That's the only scene I'm not in. So I want to do it. So he did the Backstreet Boys dance.
Interesting.
It's just him peacocking.
Yes.
But it's great. It's great. And yeah, Radio City is a great venue for that.
Radio City, nice. What was the makeup of the crowd like?
Girls and gays.
Sure.
Women and gays. Okay. We were on the younger side for the crowd.
Oh, you were on the younger
side
for the crowd.
But then also some scattered Marvel fans.
Sure.
Was a kid there. There were a few kids there in Wolverine masks.
That's cute.
Everybody seemed like they were having a fun time. It was wholesome, is what it was.
Everything about him is wholesome.
Yeah.
He's a good guy. Yeah. You ever see that clip? I'm sure you have. You have the internet. That clip where he's being interviewed by somebody and he's like, the person had been his student and he was like, you're not going to mention that I was your gym teacher? And the kid was like, I thought you wouldn't remember me. And he was like, of course I remember
you.
Because of course he was a teacher before he was.
Of course he was.
An actor. Oh, damn. Well, let's end on that note.
Let's end on the happy Hugh Jackman note.
This has been PCMC. I'm Mike Mangione. I was joined by Anthony Mangione. Anthony, we end every single episode by saying...
Go bye-bye.